celebrating the fusion of culture and creativity. Welcome to Ocupación. Hi, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Ocupación. What an honor and a privilege it is to be here again yet another week recording this for you. So let's talk about it. What have I been up to? What's my headspace this week? It is a beautiful, crisp winter day here in New York City. It's quiet in a way that's unusual for this city. And it allows one to be extra pensive, extra thoughtful. And quite frankly, it also allows for one to have a little bit of the winter blues, which I've been experiencing. But I see lots of folks kind of taking time, being a little bit more patient, taking their time crossing the street, taking a moment longer to make a decision about where to walk. You could just kind of see the pace of the city slow down, and it's really beautiful to watch, and a nice change of pace for a moment there. You know, there's been so much news and just so much going on in the city regarding the pandemic and all of these different things that a lot of times when I start to feel a little bit overwhelmed, what I do is I revert back to things that I find very comforting. And so this week, you know, for me, that's Star Trek. And I won't talk about Star Trek for 45 minutes because I so can. But for those of you out there that are Star Trek fans, I have been rewatching Deep Space Nine for the fifth time, rewatching Deep Space Nine. And I did make it to the end, blown away by the last few episodes. Super emotional, super incredible, well written, just really cool. So if you're out there, you're listening, and you are also watching Deep Space Nine, shoot me a line. I want to talk to somebody about my fifth go around and some of my observations. I've also not just been focusing on Star Trek, folks. I've also been really indulging in photography, and not in my own photography, but more so in this one Swedish artist that I'm really interested in. His name is Anders Petersen, and he has this really long career, these 50-year span of photographs, and particularly his photographs in the 1960s are really interesting. There's this one series where he takes photos in this place called Café Les Mitz in Germany. I think it's in Hamburg. Let me just set the scene a little bit. It's like a dive bar. There's, you know, there are sex workers there. There are sailors coming in and out, you know, people who are there all the time, like regulars, people who are there, you know, sort of fighting. There are all kinds of chaos that goes on, you know, in the regular ins and outs of this dive bar in this town. And this photographer is there, and sort of he's part of the crowd. You know, these seem to be his friends. He seems to have an emotional connection to a lot of the people in the photographs. And he has almost like this documentary style way in which he takes pictures, these very intimate prints and images that are so gorgeous. And they really say so much about the period of time, about the people in them, their connections to each other, these very interesting moments in history. And I first discovered this artist at Fotografiska, which is this museum here in New York City. And then after that, I just haven't been able to stop just looking this up and indulging in these images, because they're really taken without judgment and without a clear perspective from the artist, at least not one that I can see. And so it allows you to really like humanize the moments that you're seeing and really connect to the people. And there's even a person that he took a photo of. He has a series of photos with this one person that kind of looks like me, or looks like I looked when I was a teenager. And it has me very like interested and connected. So I hope that you are also inspired by a piece of art or a piece of music this week, and that you're feeling, you know, comforted, connected to creativity. Which brings me to today's episode, because I'm interviewing somebody so interesting and something so different than what I've seen before, what we've seen before on the show so far. I interviewed Rafa from Maltas con Leche. And Maltas con Leche is this artistic collective of people. It's a nine artist group of folks who create these gorgeous murals, and they participate in workshops. They teach, teaching artists. They have all these demonstrations and different events that they work on. They have painted murals across the U.S. in different cities. They've also painted murals in Colombia. And they get together with these different organizations and, you know, create a cultural moment a lot of times in these really different style, like vibrant murals. And they do it together as a family. And they're all these different, you know, ages and very different people, very different artistic talent and style, but all of which has been fostered and encouraged by Rafa, who has this capacity to really allow for his children to grow into their creativity and grow into their individuality. And the family really stays connected through this process of creation together. And he's really turning them into these professionals. This is something that I hadn't really thought about before, but in speaking to Rafa, I was really blown away by the possibility of that, the possibility of raising artists in this way. So I hope you enjoy it. I'd love to hear your thoughts. And so without further ado, here is my interview with Rafa from Maltas con Leche. Enjoy. It is my pleasure to welcome to Ocupación Rafa Menéndez from Maltas con Leche. Hi, Rafa. How you doing?
Good evening. I am doing great. Thank you.
It is such a pleasure to have you on the show. I am so excited to speak to you. Why don't you introduce yourself to the audience?
I wear many hats. I go by many names, but I guess the one that stuck the most recently is Rafa. And I am an artist. I am the founder of Maltas con Leche. I am a father of seven, and I am a mentor to many.
Okay, I love it. So let's get into it. Tell us about your creative life.
Creative life. I mean, art is definitely in everyone's veins in this home here. So it's everyone at some point is on track, or art is everywhere, basically. Everybody's clothing has paint on. There's not a table that doesn't have paint. There's not a space in this house that doesn't have art on it or some kind of project. Art is a lifestyle.
Okay, so let's take us to the beginning. So I do want to get into talking about the family element of Maltas con Leche, and I want to hear about all of it, but I want to start with you, Rafa. Tell me a little bit about you. When did you realize that art was your life? When did you realize that you were a creative person? How did it manifest in your young life?
Oh, for me, it was easy. I was raised an only child with working parents. And so on a very limited budget. So I literally knew I would not get the toys that you would see on TV. So I would just kind of draw them out and cut them out and play with them like actual action figures. And I would create my own and cut them out. And I had like a box of drawings. And that was like my escape. And art really helped me a lot in where I grew up, in the neighborhood I grew up in. The fact that I could draw and other kids in elementary school could see that, they would like be nicer to me. Oh, we're not going to beat him up because he could draw. He could probably draw something cool for us to give away. So it was definitely my go-to.
A little bit of survival there. Well, how did your family react to this when they saw you creating these drawings and they're watching you dive into this creative world? What was that like for your family?
It wasn't a career that I guess Latinos, at least where my family was from, was kind of like an option. It was more of a hobby. So it wasn't something that was encouraged. If anything, it looked like a waste of time. Wasn't a traditional job that people, I didn't know it was even a job. till later on in life, I figured out, I'm like, wow, which is kind of like why I love helping people, because sometimes people just don't know that, hey, that's a job. You can go and do that yourself. So yeah, I wasn't really encouraged at all, to be honest. Just something I did.
Something that you did. I'm curious, what kinds of things were you into at that time? Like outside of your creative expression, like who were you? What were you into? What were you following? What kind of young person were you?
I was a young person who tried to survive, to be honest. Like I grew up in Long Island City back when it was really, it's bougie now. But when I grew up, I was two blocks from the hooker spot where all the hookers would be at. You literally walk by the hookers to go to school. It was not your normal, it was normal for us, actually. It was normal for us. So it was a rough area. And my mom was never home because she worked all the time, which was normal. And even though I had a stepdad, it was pretty much being like a single parent, single mom. And so I knew I had to be home at this time. I knew I had to take myself to school. I knew how to walk back from school. And so it was always kind of a survival, like, how do I survive until, or how do I get home? Because you're not allowed to go home by yourself, but I'm a parent picking you up, but there's not going to be a parent to pick me up. So I got to sneak out and pretend that, hey, that's my mom over there. And that was literally like my hustle all through elementary school.
And what kinds of things were you attracted to? Like when you think back at, on those days, teen years, like what kinds of things did you look at and you were interested in, you know, colors or influences that you might have had at that time, music, what was it?
I would say a lot of Charlie Brown was definitely my first. It's probably the first thing I learned to draw in Snoopy. And I learned to draw it with my eyes closed. That was kind of that in comedy. I watched a lot of I Love Lucy. I got to see black and white, so I know what black and white is like because of my age. I was like, oh, I know what black and white TV is because I grew up on that.
You know, I really do relate to that because my mother and my father worked quite a lot. And so I spent a lot of time in front of the TV going through the channels that were available, like without cable. And I remember I Love Lucy in particular being a really big part of my youth. And Peanuts Gang and Snoopy and all of those things. So I 100% relate to that. I'm curious for you, when did you start to kind of transition into realizing like, man, maybe this is something I'd like to do. Maybe this is a career option for me.
I actually didn't know that that was an option until end of middle school when you start picking out your high school. And I started seeing that, oh, there's high schools for art. Go figure. I never knew that. So the School of Art and Design in Manhattan, I didn't know about it until it was time to apply. And because I didn't know about it, I wasn't prepared for it. So it was like my first, this major disappointment. I applied. I went for the exam. I literally created a portfolio the night before. I had some friends come over and help me draw stuff. I'm like, I don't know, it's just draw whatever. And I'll say I did it. And even though I could draw people, because I always would draw, like I had my stepfather was an alcoholic. I would draw him all the time, knocked out on the sofa. Like I would just do sketches of him. So I could draw people, but I didn't have a portfolio. I didn't know what that was. It was all new to me. So I ended up applying to Thomas Edison, which was a trade school. And it was like their second year of being co-ed, because I guess it was all male prior. And I went to become a mechanic.
Did you find that in your work as a mechanic or in your studies as a mechanic that you were able to employ some of this creativity?
No. So I knew immediately, like, I'm not that type of guy. I'm not that man. I'm not like that. And luckily they had an art program and I was able to transfer over. And then I realized that art in that particular neighborhood in that school was more of a easy way out for a lot of kids. So kind of almost back to the same scenario, like kids who are really popular because of, hey, could you do my art assignment for me? And it was easy for me. So I would do it. And then I'd be kind of being with the cool kids. So that was my high school.
I'm curious, you know, because in some of these neighborhoods that you're describing, you know, I'm from a neighborhood that's similar to what you're describing. And there was art everywhere, at least where I was from, right? I'm from Southern California, like at Los Angeles. And there were tattoos everywhere, for example. Everybody okay. had tattoos all over their body and their arms, and you would see artwork in that way, or murals, for example. Was there anything in your community like that that struck you or that
yes.
was of interest? Tell me about that.
As soon as you said that, and it's actually because it's one of my projects, I've been working with one of my daughters, graffiti. I was obsessed with graffiti. It was still on the trains because this is 80s. And there was still graffiti in there, and I was obsessed with it. And I read everything. I would stand by the window and read, oh, look at Air, Smith, S. So I memorized the names. Look at that letter, how it goes in there. And the cartoon characters would come back out. So that graffiti was a major influence for me. Like I wanted to be part of it as much as I could. I was able to link up in high school with a kid who was part of a spray can group or a crew, and I became a filler for them for like two nights, and it was like the highlight of my high school career.
I love that. What was it about that street art and just seeing it everywhere that inspired you?
So one of the crazy things we did, like now as a parent, I'm like, oh, don't do that. But one of the crazy things we would do is like we would tag up Grand Central Parkway, which is like a major highway. And we would get dropped off, and there was a sequence that you had to follow. One person does a fill, the other person does a line, the other guy does a highlights. So by the time the car would drop you off in the highway under the bridge, he'd get out and go to come back around. By the time he comes back around to pick you up, you should be done. So it was wow. It was pretty organized.
Wow. And I mean, it sounds kind of thrilling, right? Like you're getting together with your friends, you're coming up with a sketch or whatever idea you have, and then you're planning the operations on how to execute it. And there's this time limit.
Oh, very. Yeah, definitely. It made you look, I looked at graffiti differently. I looked at it like, oh, I wonder how they did that, and figured out like, oh, this guy's hanging from the rooftop. He had to walk in across the train tracks to do that. And, you know, you look at the risks, but you wanted the exposure. And at the same time, you learn that nobody could know it was you because you would go to jail and pay some heavy fines.
Okay. So there's like almost like a subversive underground world that was also a part of this kind of expression of community that we saw there. I'm curious how that's translated for you after that fact. So once you started to be kind of falling in love with the city and the street art, did that start to translate into a desire to start honing in your skills and your craft, start learning more about how to perfect what you were doing?
It did. And I started being a dad really early. So by high school, by graduation time, I already had a child on the way. Matter of fact, my son was at my graduation. So it kind of dictated, but I did have we had one Latino teacher in the entire school, and he happened to be the art teacher. And it was his influence and attention that he could see the BS between the kids that were just there to pass or just get by and the ones that wanted it. And he's the one that said, hey, you know, I've never had any students that went to this college. And out of respect, me and my friends, we ended up applying to that college and we all got in. So we went to Pratt. And we graduated from Pratt, but he's the one that planted that seed in us.
Wow, I love that idea of respeto. It's so important, you know, in so many different communities. The idea that you had this mentor and that the way that you were treated was so impactful that you would, out of respect, kind of apply to this school and then get in. What a major life change and trajectory, right? So you get to this school, and what kinds of reactions did you have? What did you learn? Who did you meet?
I met a lot of foreign people. Pratt, I think, is mainly, I would say almost 60% people from outside, mainly Asian countries. I definitely felt very uncultured. I felt the gap from my educational level to everyone else's was extremely apparent. I mean, I got through all of elementary and middle school. I got by just for art. Like, teachers back then would have the bulletin boards, and they'd be like, don't worry about the test, Raphael. Can you just draw this for me? Because I could have the nicest one out of all the teachers. And I'd be like, sure. And she would pass me. Literally, that was like all of middle school for me, and some of elementary. Like, they're like, oh no, can you draw this? Because, you know, I want the nicest board on the floor. And I'm like, yeah. But when you got to college, it was a huge wake up call for me. Like, oh, you're not nowhere near where everybody else is. So it was a struggle.
You know, I think a lot of people can relate to that, depending on, you know, their background and sort of the expectations of the world and what is considered to be a level of education that people think is appropriate, or the kinds of things that people know that they value versus the other things that people may not value that are just as valid, right? How did you get through that? Like, when you look back during those times and you think about where you are today in terms of honing in your skills and the confidence that you have in creating, how did you get there?
Back to the whole respecto thing, like, I didn't want to go to college, but my mom's like, that was her mindset. Like, you have to go to college. So it was just a determination, because even while I was in college, I actually had like two professors who told me, like, you're wasting your time here. Like, why are you here? Or stop taking my class, because I'm going to fail you again. There was one teacher in particular that failed me twice. And, you know, you're in college, you're paying for that shit. So it's money. But I was like, nah, I'm not going to let you do me like that. Like, I'm going to pass this class. I don't see there's anything crazy that's happening here that I can't do. I didn't have the time to dedicate it because I was a dad. So I had a full-time job and full-time student. So it was more challenging. There was days that, people knew me like, oh, that's the guy that brings his kid to school, you know? So my son would come. If I couldn't get a babysitter, or for whatever reason, if I couldn't pay the daycare that week, I'd have to take him with me. And I'm like, hey, this is, you know, and some teachers would be okay with it.
Wow. I mean, it sounds like when you're talking about this story, you're mentioning all of these people who, you know, there were a couple of haters, right? But there are so many people who stand out as being supportive and really recognizing your talents and recognizing the value of artistic skill. And especially for somebody who had, really, it's three jobs, because being a full-time student, a full-time worker, and also a full-time parent, right?
Mm-hmm.
This was a lot. And it kind of brings us to where you are now, because you mentioned, you know, your child going with you to school. At this point, your children are part of it with you, right? So let's start there. When did you start to notice, like, okay, my kids are creative?
I guess I noticed it early on for some more than others. Some had like natural, I would say uninfluenced art, because there's uninfluenced art and there's influenced art. So I have a daughter, she's technically amazing. And I was like, oh, you're really good. But then I have another daughter that's just very creative, or just like a natural bubble. And I'm like, oh, you're good too, but you're lazy. And then I have another child who's just like, speaks a different language in art and blows my mind. And they didn't want anything to do with art. Only now they've accepted it. I felt like they were running away from it because they didn't want to be like their siblings.
Wow. I mean, this is really fascinating. And it's why I'm so excited to speak to you, because I haven't seen anything like this in my world. And what you're doing is really exciting. How did you begin to nurture their creative talents, to kind of help them hone their skills? How did you start doing that?
I think it's like anything, you know, people make that argument. If you are your environment, or is your environment, you know, you, or, and art was always around me, and I didn't work in the art field. It was always a hustle, and it wasn't a full-time job because I kept having kids. I always joke about it. I had a kid for every graduation. I had a child for college, high school, boot camp, you name it. We had a break at 9/11, but the following year I had more kids. And the art was always around. Like, I, at one point, because I wasn't working in art, I told myself, well, maybe if it's not for you, it's for you to teach it to someone else. And I accepted that for many years. So I made sure that they got the encouragement that I wanted. And I was like, hey, you can be whatever you want. Like, there's kids making money at 5 years old. It could be you. Why not? You know, and I kept just telling it to them over and over, like, you're an artist now.
Right. Like, they're this understanding that. And I wonder if this comes directly, I see kind of the through line from your history here, where you're teaching them that it doesn't necessarily require you to have this like formalized training that someone else has decided is valuable formalized training in order to consider yourself and identify as an artist, right? And that's something that you're really teaching your children. Let's talk about your children. Tell me a little bit about them. Who makes up Maltas con Leche? How many are involved? What do they do? Tell me about their strengths.
So I created Maltas con Leche because, one, I wanted to keep my kids grounded on their Latino roots. And so Malta is a very popular drink. And you know, the Caribbean, Central, or South American. And then, you know, the leche, the mixing. And then for me, it was like a deeper meaning. It was more of a way to identify visually being mestizo, leche being white, being European, and then la malta being dark, being Indio. And I felt like it was a cool wordplay. And then yet reminding them like, hey, yo, Latino, all my kids got very Latino names. So they couldn't hide it if they wanted to. So it kind of started with coming up with a name. And then I would take on mural jobs as a side hustle, and I'd bring my kids with me. And that's kind of how it started. So if I had to paint a mural, all of them would come with me. I'd give all of them a task. I would talk to them like a meeting. I would literally sit down. We would sit at the table and we're like, hey, what can you do? What can you do? What can you do? So one of my kids is more organizing. Another one wants to be the center. Another one just wants to be behind the scene. One likes to clean. But to me, it was just another way to keep them with me and to spend time with them. So that's kind of how it started.
Wow. So let's start there. I mean, you talked about wanting to keep them connected to their roots. Why was that important to you?
Because my mom's from Colombia. So Colombia in the 70s, 80s had the stereotype of cocaine and drugs. My mom's embarrassed to be Colombian. She's 79 years old. She would tell anybody she's anything but Colombian. I'm Dominican, I'm Puerto Rican. She would never say it because of the stereotype in it. And she was always embarrassed of it. And I remember being embarrassed of speaking Spanish because there was nobody around me that spoke Spanish as a child. And I was like, you know, that was just ignorance. I just didn't know better. So I made sure that all my kids had very Latino names. Like, no, you're not going to run from it.
So this really is about, for you, teaching how to be proud of where you come from, right? Because we do know that a lot of people kind of struggle with this. This is a process that a lot of people from the Latin community go through, because there is a stigma that's associated with our ethnicity here and our culture in the United States. And so being able to pass along to your children not just the pride in identifying as artists, but the pride in identifying as Latinos, right?
100%. Especially, I mean, I raised my kids in Brooklyn, Sunset Park, which is predominantly Puerto Rican. And I moved them out here to Pennsylvania. And it was like, it's the only, I don't want to say it's a regret, but it's the only thing that I wish I would have thought about race when you're moving. Because this has definitely like been a eye-opener out here with how we're perceived, Latinos, perceived less than. And so when I brought them out here, you know, we weren't represented in their teachers and any other school. They stood out just because of having Latino names, even though my middle bunch of the kids, they don't speak Spanish at all. They understand it, but they don't speak it, which is the second generation. You know, they were almost all forced into ESL classes because of their names. And that was a fight. Mm-hmm. In itself, like, you're giving my kids less education because of their names. Like, that's wrong.
And so I'm seeing, you know, because when I look at what you present and what Maltas con Leche presents, there is a lot of Latino identity that's present in the artwork as well. And where this artwork is taking place, like a lot of the centers and organizations and businesses that you're partnering with to create these murals, a lot of them are also sort of cultural in some aspect. Maybe you can speak a little bit about that. Tell me about what is the community like where you are, and how have you been able, along with your children, to dive into that community artistically?
We've volunteer, if there's anything to do with volunteering, like I'm big on that with my kids. I told my kids, you have to give back to the community. You have to give back. So it could be as simple as a pumpkin carving yearly, which we have, and everyone is welcome. Come make a mess of my house. Use my everything I have, all kinds of creativeness, flea markets, whatever it is. Like, we volunteer, we're there. Oh, you guys want to paint fire hydrants? Well, give us a fire hydrant. We'll paint it as a family and we'll design it ourselves. And we show up, we brand, all our shirts say Montas con Leche. Like, we come prepared because I did go to college. So I kind of know how to make sure you stand out. And, you know, all my kids come branded. And, you know, we just start to paint, and people, you know, we did this one hotel. It was called the Allentown Hotel. And I remember when I showed up, it was a bunch of, there's a bunch of artists there. And when they saw my kids, you could hear them. What are these kids going to do? Cause we got the biggest part of the hotel. We got the entrance, the awning. And they're like, wow, we were going to need scaffolding and ladders and everything. And they're like, and I can hear them. But when we were done, those kids were, the other kids or adults were out there smoking, drinking. It was raining, nighttime, and we're still out there doing it. Like, if anything, my kids definitely understand work ethic. Like, no, we're going to get this done no matter what. We're going to get it done. And whatever you do is going to be great.
So tell us about the process. So you started to talk to us about this, because what you're referencing is that this is a lot of work, right? And so in this element of creating, how do you get started? What is the creative process here? So you mentioned there's like a meeting element first, right?
Yes.
How does each member contribute? How do their talents shine as you all kind of start to plan this?
So if I see the organizations I've worked with, if they'll send me an email, or I'll see something, somebody forwards, hey, this looks like a Matas Leche event, and they'll send it to me on Instagram. And I'll go and I'll present it to the kids. Like, hey, you guys interested? You interested? You interested? You interested? And because I don't want to force them. So like, yeah, I'll do it. Yeah, I'll do that. Okay. All right, cool. So let's talk about it. And I schedule a time that they all can mess with. We'll sit at the table. This is the space. We open up the iPad. We draw it out. What do you guys think? What are your ideas? And I feel like I like to orchestrate it and sit back and let them do it. And I step in where I feel like it needed, if it's something really tall, or, and then I try to compose it. I present it again. And when they agree, then I present it to the client or to whatever we're doing.
Wow. And what is it like for you to watch your children executing this incredible creativity?
It's normal for me. Like, a lot of my friends were like, oh, that's pretty cool, man. I can't believe you do this with your kids. Like, it's kind of like normal. It really is. For us, this is normal. This is like, you know, I have a garage full of paint. This routine, every car in this house has paint in it. Somehow it's spilled over. But it's just a way of life.
I see that. I mean, all the way till maybe you can talk to us a little bit about their age ranges, but I've seen you, even your youngest is part of like a cooking show. She has her own cooking show, right? Camila Cooks. Mm-hmm. And there are all these different, like, she's putting, you know, the eggs in the batter, and it's really adorable, and she's doing all of these things. So each member of your family seems to have like their own element of expression that makes up Maltas con Leche. Tell us about that. What are the age ranges and what are they bringing to the table?
So my oldest, he doesn't live with us. So he's not involved with it anymore, but he's 26. He's in Wisconsin. But my second oldest, she's 21. She does animation and she's in Portland. But when she comes home, we plan projects. We're actually working on a storybook right now together, where she's creating the characters and I'm painting the backdrop. And it's actually a backdrop for my childhood of Long Island City with the graffiti, which you brought up and it triggered in my head, of me riding the 7 train and all the cultural rides experience you get from all the different flavors you can smell and see and on the 7 train. Then I have my 20-year-old Lola. She's my painter and she chose not to go to college. And I encouraged her. I was like, college is not for everyone. I was like, you can be a painter now. And I'm big on vision boards. And I said, I pushed them to set goals. And I was like, you got to set a goal. And what are you doing to get there? So she's a painter. She's also my apprentice. So I do tattooing. So she's also my apprentice. And then I have my 18-year-old who was running away from art, but now they're going applying for college for fine arts, and they have a very unique language. They're my trans son, and I have a 13-year-old who loves bass. She loved art before, and she would always paint and draw whatever she wanted on the walls. And then she, I guess, got art block. Maybe is that a thing, art block? So she's now does bass, and now she loves art. Now she wants to apply to a charter art school for both art and bass. And then we have Camila, who doesn't want to be left behind with anything. She's like, whatever you're doing, I'm doing.
How old is she?
She's 4.
Okay. Wow. All right. And it sounds like you really have this capacity to look deeply and know your children, know what they're interested in, what their talents are, how to encourage those talents, how to help them become who they are. With Maltas con Leche, how do you think that that's contributed to their growth and development as people?
I can see everything we've done in a mini version of it in my 21-year-old. So she's in a dorm room with 4 other kids, her age, a little bit older as well. No, she's the oldest. She's the oldest. So it took her 2 years to get into the college she wanted to go. And that was like a whole ordeal. Like, be patient. You're going to get there. Just got to be patient. And I see how she takes lead, and she's like, hey, we should do this, and hey, we should do that, and breaking her friends out of their social discomfort. She's like, no, you got to come out. You got to get some fresh air. And I'm like, oh, look at you. Look at you, girl. You know, she's like 5'1". She's tiny. Everybody's like a monster around her. And she's like, no, we should all do this. And she's all about participating in anything that's like a social service or art, or creating art for, let's say, whether it's Black Lives Matter or Trans Lives Matter, whatever's going on, if it's culturally related, it attracts her to it. She's like, no, I have to be there, she says. So I see that influence in her a lot more than in my other kids. Well, all my other kids definitely display their own way of how to manage their time and their goals.
Right, because there's so many skills that you're learning here. It's not just, you know, I mean, there's so much, right? You're learning these hard skills. You're learning how to manage your time. You're learning how to make a plan, how to set some goals, how to execute these things, how to collaborate and work together. But you're also learning all these other things that are kind of a little bit more difficult to grasp, which are, you know, social justice and the importance of being present and aware in the world, especially in the way that you all present in the community in creating these murals. What is it like to actually be there creating this as a family? What is that working relationship like?
Well, it's never the end result. You forget how rough it was. So I can tell you all my kids have traumatic experiences creating portfolios around me. And I tell them it is needed. So my daughter didn't get into college her first year out of high school. And to me, she's more talented than I am. Technically sound, very hard worker. If anything, I always thought like, hey, you draw too much. You're going to break your hands. Like, you got to rest. Like, she's drawing all the time. But she didn't get into college because I felt like high school kind of just said, yeah, it's good. But it wasn't good. It was eh. And they were just not there to give tough love or be like, hey, that's not acceptable. And she was worried to show me her work. And so after the process, so once I got involved, like, yeah, you know, you're going to put in some work now. You're going to put in some work. Like, no, it's not good enough. Make it better. And I pushed her, and now she is where she is, and she was able to get the scholarship she got. But it's always this headaches. Some of my kids cry. Some of them get upset. Some of them don't show up for work because if I get paid, they get paid. So if we're doing a mural and it's a 3-day job and you only work one day, that's okay. I'm not going to beg you to be there because it's up to you. But then I'm going to pay you accordingly to your work.
And what would you say is the best part of working together, and what would you say is the most surprising thing that you've realized that has come from this?
The time. I can never get that time back. Like, that time that I spend with them is like it usually revolves food. what are we going to have for lunch? You know, or what are we going to eat after this mural? So food is like a big thing. Now, I would joke about it. We'll be like calculating a measurement or something like, hey, I know you. Are you thinking what I'm thinking? Like, what are we going to eat today? You know? So that time is priceless to me. Like, that I got to spend it with them. I rather, it's the best thing in the world, you know, because everybody's going to grow up and have their own life, but I always have those memories.
And they have the memory of working with their father and also working with one another and kind of watching each other create and being excited for each other. What's been surprising about this for you? Is there anything that as you're doing this, you have these present moments of like, wow, you know, something that sticks out to you?
I've always looked at it like it's no different than sports, right? So parents are real big. Oh, you got to be the best, or whether it's boxing or basketball, or football, whatever it is, it's you have to put work into it. So I learned, because I didn't do art. Art wasn't a means for me to survive. It was just more of a hobby hustle. And I told them like, it can't be like that for you, because I have friends who did graduate and live a great life doing it, and are very successful, but it requires dedication. I was like, hey, this can't be a hobby. Like, if you're going to do it, we're going to do it right. Like, you have to get paid. You have to get paid for it. Like, you have to value. I don't care. Don't worry about the age thing. You have to get paid. Or selling their work, like believing in it. We had this one event that went viral. My daughter confronted somebody in blackface in my neighborhood for Halloween, wearing Confederate flag blackface, and she recorded it. When that went viral, somebody from my community, his name is Bart Bailey, he does a lot of cultural training for companies. He reached out and he's partners with us so much. He's been a great spokesman for us. So he's opened up like chambers of commerce. So we've done like live painting for people. So we'll always adapt our art to the settings. And I feel like that's very important, actually. That's a point I want to make. One thing about graffiti growing up, it's always been about me. Look at my name, look at my art. And I've been really big on like, if it's not your neighborhood, you have to make sure it represents the neighborhood. So when we do murals, we'll do a mural like of, if it's in a Latin community, it's going to be Cantinflas. It's going to be Chispirito. It's going to be people from the community. Nobody wants to see a skull on the wall and, you know, all this blood. Like, they live here. Like, you're just visiting. You guys are from a other area. You come here, you tag up the neighborhood, and then you leave, but it doesn't represent the neighborhood. You know, just so that you can post it, or like, it's, that's not okay with me. I feel like you have to respect the area you're creating art. Like, understand your community, understand the impact of the kids that are walking by here. Like, what are they seeing?
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about this as I was watching these reels of your family creating, you know, Maltas con Leche, working together to create these murals over time. I was watching these time lapses. And as it was happening, mm-hmm. I was watching multiple time lapses. And I thought, wow, each one is so different. And each one has such a unique vision and communicates something completely different. What is it like to work in creating murals and customizing each project to fit the needs of that particular person who's really jumping into to bring you into their space?
It depends on, I guess, the client. You know, it really does. Because at the end of the day, if the client doesn't want something, then it's got to make sense for us too. You know, so like, I always tell people, like, hey, you're not just getting my years of experience. You're going to get generational points of view, which is totally, you're not going to get that at an agency. You're going to get people in their middle age who have a certain vision. Here you're getting generational. Like, I literally ask my kids, like, how is this? How is this interpreted? How do you see this? And if it's a red flag to anybody, like, you know what, let's just leave that color out, or let's leave this out. Or this could be seen as homophobic, and that's not going to be in there, you know, like, whatever it is. So I'm very conscientious of that. I know one mural we did for Bethlehem South Art, it was a young lady and she had skin discoloration, which I thought, like, it's something beautiful to show and highlight. And I had this Assyrian word love in it. And then a couple of people had asked, like, why don't you just put it in English? Because they couldn't read it. I'm like, because you have a Syrian community, a very dominant Syrian community. And they may not look like the young lady that was painted, but that's their word. So that's why we put it. And, you know, you get challenges like that. And I'm slick with the mouth because I'm from New York. I'm going to check you politely. And I'm like, oh, you mean because you can't read it, it shouldn't be there? Well, maybe you should learn how to read Syrian.
I love that. And your children are really, you know, there really is this artist collective spirit where you're all getting together and making these decisions across generations. I think that's so fascinating. What kinds of things have you learned as an artist from watching the way in which your children interpret the world and then create?
I could say the skills I never learned that, like, my oldest daughter, I saw how nice she was with color pencils and it became part of my repertoire. But at the same time, just being more open-minded, like not under, you know, growing up in the 80s and 90s, a New Yorker, you have a certain mindset towards things. And my kids have totally wrecking balled that everything. And like, no, if you love your kids, you're going to have to learn and understand. Because I have like the whole rainbow flag in my house. And that's not accepted in Latino communities. Most of them are not. You know, it's a hidden thing or you don't talk about it. And you know, I still have my mom that lives in my house, and she's in denial of most of my kids. And eventually, after so many years, she's slowly, you know, kind of like accepting some things. But like, no, you have to learn. You realize what matters is the person inside and not what they present. So I think that's, for me personally, has been the biggest learning. And then wherever I get, I always share everywhere I go. I'll ask or I'll educate people, hey, did you ask them their pronouns? It's been the best lesson.
And I appreciate that you allow yourself to take it in, right? What do you think it is about you, Rafael, that has allowed you to open up your mind and open your heart to really sharing your family with the community in this way?
I don't see how it's impacting anyone. I mean, I'll get some feedback from some people when we get hired for some stuff, but I just see it more as an opportunity for me to show my kids how proud I am of them and to show them like, hey, you know, I believe in you, like shit. Like I talk about them all the time, even when they're right next to me, they're like, oh my God, shut up. You know, but I think, I don't know what parent does it, you know, what parent wouldn't talk up their kids.
I want to talk a little bit about the specifics of Maltas con Leche as it relates to your artistic style. What can people expect, or what has come to be known of Maltas con Leche? What kind of style do you have? What are the murals, like common themes in your murals? Tell us about that.
It's definitely always a heavy woman presence, you know. So prior to my son being trans, I mean, I was the only guy in the house. So it's a house full of women. I think there's 9 people in this house. That's a lot, you know. So I always check myself because I feel like I have too much. I'm an alpha personality type, and I want to make sure that I don't outvoice my kids. So when you get a mural from us, or you get a sign us, like I really look at it like, okay, who can do it? Is it a one person job or is it a family job? Sometimes people hit me up for logos, and I'm like, well, look at my daughter's work. Here's her page. If you like that, then I'll reach out to her and she'll do it for you, or a painting. So when I get commissions, I give it to my kids. I rarely ever do one myself. Unless it's a tattoo, then that's different. If it's a mural, then at that point, then that's when I get involved. So it's more of a, depending what the mural is, I definitely always try to attach to the roots of it. Some paintings, if somebody is from, let's say, Nigeria, we're going to figure out what's the Nigerian flower. We're going to figure out, like, we're going to do the work. Give me Nigerian patterns. And I want my kids to learn how to do that research. Like, no, you make that personal. You make it, like, so unique that people are like, damn, you captured everything. Like, yeah, well, that's what we love to do. Because we learn from it.
It's part of the professionalism of kind of understanding that this is a job and that there's a client that's at the end of this and is sort of wanting to connect with this piece of art. I'm curious, what are some things that you've seen from your, that are common threads across some of the projects that you've worked on? Like, from, because for me, as I'm looking at your work, there are a lot of elements of it that are very bright, that there's a lot of movement in what you create. And there's also almost like some cartoonish styles that you can see there, a little bit of line drawing, especially in some of your tattooing. What are some threads there that you, that you see?
I think you named them all right there. It's going to be, you know, if you see a woman's face, that's my daughter, Lola. Lola does, that's what she does. She loves empowering women and she feels about strong women. Jubilee is more technical. She'll do something animation influence. Ben is more doodle. Katarina is still figuring out her style, but she's right there with everyone else. And then, you know, and I bring Camila. Camila's at the age now that she can kind of hold properly a pen or a brush. And we have a graffiti wall in the garage and I have a practice. So whatever job I get next, I already know I'm bringing her with me because she does like it and she wants to be part of it. So she'll be part of the crew. And then eventually when Santiago, which is my youngest, he's three, once he gets it, I'm sure, you know, if it's around you, the kids are going to want to do it. That's one thing I've learned. Like, everybody wants to be in the mix. Nobody wants to be out.
You know, one thing that I've learned, not just from doing this podcast, but from just spending a lot of time in artistic communities, is that there's so much deeply personal, emotional expression that cannot be stopped when you're creating art, even if it's a commissioned piece, right? How you're feeling, who you are, that moment really like bleeds onto the canvas or onto the wall. Is what have you learned about your family and about your kids from just watching them express themselves this way creatively?
I mean, it just amazed me that what they can do and what they do on their own now. So Lola went to a live painting, but I couldn't go because that it's got to be me. I was like, oh, have somebody take pictures. I want to be there. That confidence, I would say, in them that you start them as a child. That confidence is important. I think that's what took me so long to finally dive in and be like, no, I'm going to be a full time artist. I didn't have that confidence. I was art is not really like that kind of thing where people make a living that you're aware of. It's not that common. Even though we're surrounded by art in the Latino community, art is everywhere. It's our music, it's our food, it's everywhere. But it's not really seen, I feel, as a viable job or a way of living.
And you've taken sort of some steps to allow your children to see it as a way of living. And so watching them step into their confidence as artists, with your leadership and the way that you've learned to do that for yourself, what has that been like for you?
It's been very rewarding. I'm enjoying watching my oldest daughter's animations, watching her do her work, watching her, because I know she's a workhorse. And I'm like, oh, whatever you're going to do, you're going to get to it. You know, and I just try to remind her, remember your habits, remember your goals, remember to journal, remember to write this down, remember, you know, any resource your school has, you have to tap into it because you're paying for it, you know. Just seeing it, and it's not always easy because, you know, my daughter Lola, she's 20 and, you know, she has a part-time job, which to me takes away from her art. And I'm always reminding her like, well, how are you going to get art involved? Because art has always been in my life. Like I said, it's been in middle school. I remember even in boot camp to get out of certain exercises, the drill sergeants wanted a mural. Guess what they called? They went to me and I painted a big mural and I got out of this terrible PT that everybody else had to do. And they were so happy. But it bought me time and let me know like, hey, you know what? You're not meant for this. Like your art, your skill is this. Like you need to not be doing this thing. When your contract is up, get out.
Right. I mean, there are so many competing messages out in the world, right? And you're helping to sort of help them stay on track in terms of what their dreams and goals are. I think that's really inspiring. What are the hopes as a collective or Maltas con Leche? What do you hope to achieve? Like, where is this going for you guys?
For me personally, because one thing I've at this age, I've learned that everybody's life is their own. So there's no right or wrong. if my kids choose to continue art, then that's on them. If they don't, that's on them as well. But they have their foundation here at home. But for me to be able to create that platform that's accessible to kids in general. So I do envision in the future, like Amaka's going to school, almost like, I don't know, do you watch like RuPaul's Drag Race? You watch shows like that?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right. So are you familiar with the houses? They talk about, oh, she's from the house of Eliancy, you know, whatever it may be. I want to be that house for art.
I love that. Be like the house mother for artists.
Yes. 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 I want to be that house.
I love that. You know, there, I know that Maltas con Leche has been involved with like workshops and things like that in the past. Is that something mm-hmm. that you're looking to continue to do to kind of have a greater presence in the community and have there be a massive teaching and educational element to this, the way that you're describing? Tell us about that.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's programs that I've applied to some programs in New York, but there's just so much red tape to get to it. And it was pre-COVID. But yeah, no, I'm big on that because I feel like my kids learn different skill set. Like now, I still have more kids to raise. You know, I have a 13-year-old and a you know, 4-year-old and a 3-year-old, and it's their opportunity to learn now. So for me, it's so important. And then I have a flexible schedule with my lifestyle that allows me to do that. And to me, it's a priority. Like no, this is I've worked so hard to get where I'm at now that I can just stop and go. Oh, where's the job in Texas? Oh, we'll be there. We'll be there. We're all going. And we're going to create it. So whether it's a workshop or creating, I think it's so important. We worked with Alternative Art Gallery in Allentown, Pennsylvania. And one of the things that I realized, there are some kids there that had some major depression or major stuff going on. And that 2 hours that we taught very arts and crafts, if you will, very low level with donated stuff, was their highlight. Like you would hear everything. And the thing is, like, I wouldn't teach it. I was just guiding it, but I taught my kids how to teach it. And kids learn from other kids way, you know, there's no guard. She's only like 2 years older than me. Oh, sure. And you hear them talk like, oh, you know, I didn't eat last night. I'm like, wow. Like, we painted a mural in Yasco Park. It's on YouTube in 2012. And my kids, and this is Pennsylvania. And I was like, 2012, there was a kids there barefoot, no shoes. I'm like, yo, we're not in a third world country, we're in PA, this is 2012, and this kid's out here with no shoes. And I bought lunch for my kids, which I ended up giving to them kids there because they were hungry. And I'm like, wow. And to keep them from fighting in that particular mural, it kind of lost a little bit of control towards the end. But for me to keep these kids from fighting in this park, I said, listen, if you just paint, I'll put your name on the wall. And that meant everything to them. We did the mural. We could have gotten it done in 2 days. It took us 4 because of the community interaction. But at the end of that mural, there's a whole bunch of names, including the drug dealer whose name was Diablo. We had peace for those days. And the kids now, they're still up and their name's up there. And I felt like that was important. And that was an eye opener for them. Like, hey, you guys have it really, really good. Like, look.
You know, Rafa, when you're talking, like, there's just, I wonder what the listeners are thinking. I'm so curious for this because you're really talking about art as a vehicle for so many things, right? Art as a vehicle for communicating social justice and what our priorities are in communities that are fighting for justice. You know, you're talking about art as a vehicle for education, for uplifting, for confidence, for learning hard skills, for learning hard lessons in life. And now you're talking about art as a vehicle for unity and peace. I'm curious for you, with all of this, what keeps you motivated? What keeps you going? What keeps you growing and going into all of these different spaces with your work?
I'm never satisfied. So I'm never satisfied in anything in my life. I continue wanting to push. I'm now working with a new shop once a week, and they have a whole bunch of young artists, and the owner was very nice. He's like, I'm older than everybody in the shop, including the owner. And he's like, I just need somebody with more experience to be here and teach the kids. And I'm like, I love to teach. I was like, I love to help. So, and I walk in a room and introduce myself to everybody. And I'm like, hey, what's going on? And it brought more joy to me to help these young artists figure out how to, some tattoo techniques and how to do stuff. I was like, hey, yeah, you know. And I always tell myself, like, all right, they're not your kids, so you can't be that hard with them. But you also got to check them and let them, like, you know, that's not right, right? You wouldn't pay for that, would you? And I find a way to communicate with them.
What would you say, Rafa, to somebody who is interested in using art similarly to the way you've used it as a vehicle to bond with your children, right? As a vehicle to create community, but maybe they don't know where to start or they don't know how to begin that conversation. What might you say to somebody like that?
Just do it. It's the best way to do it. Is just do it. Block off time. I mean, I'm very about structure and time. You have to block off time. Find the time that, you know, it's not too late, but you're not going to complain about putting them to bed. It's not too early. It's something in between, either after dinner or before dinner. And just do it. Block off the time and actually structure it out. Don't make it too long. Don't make it too crazy. Do baby steps. Have them included. Like, hey, what if we color? Like, even something as simple as a coloring book. What if we color it together? They're going to talk about things that you never heard of while they're coloring. You're like, oh, really? Grandma did what? Okay, I'm going to check that. So just do it. Just do it. Don't think about it. I think that's our, I think as a human being, period, like we think too much and we don't do it. Just do it. What are you going to do? You can't, it's no wasted time if you're spending it with your kids or with someone who needs you, or a niece or a nephew or someone, a child that needs it. It's not wasted time because you don't know what that time means to them.
If people are interested in continuing to follow Maltas con Leche, if they want to know more about how to get involved or be a part of this community in some way, where can people find you all? Where can they follow you?
I mean, Instagram is definitely the main vehicle for all our careers, because I tag all of them. That's the one I'm able to keep up with the most, Instagram. And I mean, we have our email. We have a website that I'm not tech savvy. I have friends trying to put it up for me. But I would just say Instagram. I have my number there. And whatever it is, like, you know, this, like, I'm all about helping because it's important. You know, it's important.
We'll put your handle in the show notes, but did you want to give your handle here for Instagram? Is it at Maltas con Leche?
Yes, it's at Maltas con Leche. It's at Maltas _ con _ Leche on Instagram or on YouTube. I think it's all one word, Maltas con Leche. So I check that frequently. And then I usually attach everyone to it. So that's usually when people reach out, it's through that. Or, and my number is on there as well. So I put a number out there so people can reach out. But definitely, we're definitely open to anything when it comes to helping a community or creating an afternoon or face paint. Like, there's so many different things that we do. Or we like to offer or to be able to help. I think it's a, you know, and we don't break the bank. Because for me, it's never been about the money. It's more about the experience and time that you're spending with the family. And I tell the kids, like, hey, you know, I always ask people what their budget is. But to me, it's like, oh, that's going to be an afternoon with me and my kids. That's how I look at it. And we're going to create art. The art to the backdrop.
I love it. Thank you, Rafa, for sharing your life story, for sharing your inspirations with us. We're so excited to be led into a little bit of Maltas con Leche. And please know that you're now part of the Ocupación family. So we embrace you here. We're so happy that you were able to stop by.
Oh, no. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for sticking around. I hope that you enjoyed that conversation. Rafa is so fun to speak to, such a warm, vibrant person, and so many insights here about how to create connectivity and strong bonds between family members and how to use art as a vehicle for that, and how to create and build community. So, I really loved that conversation. I hope you did too. And if you did, please feel free to subscribe, listen to the other shows, give us some feedback. I love when people send me messages, and I've been so blessed to have so many of them. And I wanted to take a moment to just read a review that the show received, because it was so striking and so lovely. And Ritmo Cachaca, which is the alias here, the handle, Whoever that is, you know, thank you so much for taking the time to say such beautiful things and really encourage me and continuing to do this and encouraging the community to listen. So this is a review by Ritmo Cachaca. It's called, the title is Fills a Much Needed Gap. There's nothing quite like this out there. Beautiful conversations documenting the creativity of a variety of artists of various medium. I predict one day many of these interviews will be archived by the Smithsonian Center for American Latino or similar, since these episodes border on an oral history project of creative people of Hispanic/Latin ancestry in a way I haven't seen. If you wished Marc Maron had more artists of color and different backgrounds and experiences, then this is for you. Wow, that's amazing. And it really elevates what we're doing here. So thank you so much. I really profoundly enjoyed that review. And to everyone else out there, if you have something you'd like to say about the show, I'd love to read it. So have an amazing week. I hope that you're filled with inspiration. And until the next great conversation, bye everyone.